Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Albion Obsessed podcast. We are, of course, again, England Obsessed, and we are joined by two very special guests who were lucky enough to be at the stadium. So let's start by introducing who we have on the show today. Dan, you weren't one of the ones at the stadium. How do you feel?
Gutted, really. Such a great moment to actually miss out on. So, you know, oh well. I got experience it at home. It was amazing, even just watching it at home. So, that's probably a lot better to be there. But unfortunately, I wasn't lucky enough to get there.
No, exactly. As I told you guys on the last podcast, I was literally like a few clicks away from getting a ticket. Gutted, but I won't talk about that anymore because I will actually walk away and just quit life. Cam, you were there. How are you feeling? Are you excited to be back?
Yeah, I'm delighted to be back. Thank you for having me again so soon. And yeah, just I can't wait to just talk about what happened because words can't really describe it, how amazing it is, to be honest. I'm a bit lost for words still on it, but I'll try my best.
Yeah, I think it's going to be one of those podcasts where we try and express our feelings. No words are going to ever come near to how we feel, but we'll get into that in just a moment. We do have a first appearance for Sam, who is has actually got more clean sheets against Crystal Palace than self-proclaimed world-class goalkeeper Matty Ryan. So Sam, tell us a bit about that first of all. How have you got two clean sheets against Crystal Palace?
Well, what an intro. Thanks for having me, first of all. Yeah, a bit of a funny story. Nice fun fact to celebrate, I guess. So growing up, played a lot of football. Not actually as a goalkeeper, weirdly enough. And summer tournaments growing up, you're talking, you know, your youth squads, etc., when there actually were girls' teams. That's a point for later on, I guess. But can't remember the year, but summer tournament. And we played them 1 year and we won 1-0. Wasn't playing for Brighton, unfortunately. It was like my little local team, but it was still getting a victory over the Palace. Brilliant. And then the next summer, we had a summer tournament against them. And I'm generally like a centre mid or centre back, right back sort of position. Used to fancy myself as an Anthony Knockhart, sorry, March sort of winger back in the day, but better place in defence, like a Millie Bright these days. And in group stage of our summer tournament, in our first game, our goalie got injured with a knee injury. And it was who volunteered to go and goal. And I thought, I'll do it. And next game was against Crystal Palace. And we won 1-0. Kept clean sheet there. And then we got through to the quarters and the semis. And in the semi-final, we had Palace again. And we won that game 2-0. Got through to the final. Unfortunately, lost the final on penalties. But two clean sheets against the Palace, cannot complain, and more clean sheets than Matty Ryan. Nice little banging point there.
Well, happy days. As we say, self-proclaimed world-class goalkeeper. Sam, you can take that title as well. World-class goalkeeper. As you know from listening... Exactly. As you know from listening to the podcast, we do ask our new guest three questions. So the first question is, do you remember your first Brighton and Hove Albion football match and who was it against?
I had to really think about this earlier. I mean, obviously, as you've probably seen from my Twitter recently, my experiences of football with my family have been mixed over the years. So my first game, Albion game, my first game wasn't an Albion game. My first Albion game was actually with the football team that I was just talking about, who I was playing for. And they did little trips out of the club to go see different teams. And must have been 99, I want to say 98, 99. And it was a League Cup game against Gillingham at the Wibden. And we lost 2-0. Didn't play brilliant that day, and I think it was Nomrod own goal which started the proceedings. But I still love my football, fell in love with the beautiful game all over again, and just thought I want to go back as much as possible.
Fair enough. And what a Brighton and Hove Albion way to get introduced to the club, losing 2-0 to Gillingham, who we ground shared with not that long ago, in a cup game. So yeah, falling in love with Brighton in the right way. And over the years, who's been your favourite or standout player for the Albion?
It's really hard to pinpoint just like one or two. I think, you know, we've all had different players growing up who've resonated with us. Donkey's got to be up there, you know, the one man show. And, you know, if you discount like loan spells and things, Solly March being a local lad, he's highly underrated. Really big fan of him. Murray, Knockhart. I couldn't pinpoint one, but I guess those four, obviously, they were a big part of our promotion squad as well. I know it goes way back before that, but I'd have to say Donkey, you know, from with Dean to Wembley and beyond. Got to be Donkey.
Yeah, that is probably one of the toughest questions. And I'm, to be honest, I'm glad that I've never had to answer it. And I'm not going to answer it now, Dan, if you're thinking of asking me. And we all love a football shirt. You're wearing a wonderful football shirt at the moment. Probably one of my favourites has ever been. I know it's a pre-match shirt. But talking Albion, what is your favourite Albion shirt over the years?
If you gave me in my lifetime sort of thing, I'd have, and, you know, be looking at photos, I'd have to say our sort of away kit from 91-92 season, which is like, was like the Tuitt sort of kind of colour, branding kind of colour. I absolutely love that. But in terms of times where I'm old enough to remember players wearing it, I'd say our green and black stripes from early 2010-2011, I think it was. Love that. Or the red and black. Would love to see us do a kit of that very soon. Their away kits. What about a home kit? Our promotion season kit. Absolutely love that. Yeah, I'd have to say those.
Fair enough. All amazing choices. The green and black, that is just the all-time fan favourite. If you find a Brighton fan that doesn't like that shirt, just ask them why. I don't know. But we are here today. We've spoken a little bit Albion. Of course, we are Albion obsessed. But at the moment, Cam, I am feeling so England obsessed. As I said before, you were lucky enough to be at the ground. The game was built as the fight between the two best performing sides of the tournament. Did you feel like that going into the game? Was it Germany that were the ones to watch coming into the final?
I'd say yeah, a little bit, because they had Alexandra Popp, who then ended up not actually playing in the end. But I was seriously concerned about her, because she's a very good player. And Germany are like the heavyweights of women's football in Europe. They've won the European Championships like 8 times. They won it like 6 times in a row years ago. But there was just such an expectation for England, wasn't there? Like a home final, you know, we'd done so well in all the games leading up to that point. I was very nervous. I was very, very, very nervous just because I know what Germany could do. But I just hoped that England could do it. And thank God they did.
Yeah, thank God they did. And obviously, we'll talk about all of the turning points, the ups and downs of the game. It was such a roller coaster, probably one of the worst I've felt watching a football game before. So I can't imagine how it was in the stadium. Dan, the starting lineup was to be expected, really, wasn't it? It stayed the same throughout the whole tournament. There's been calls, obviously, with substitutes coming on and performing really well, like Russo, Toon, whether they might edge their way into the side. But Serena Weigman staying true to the team that she's picked all along. Were you surprised? I can't imagine you were.
No, sorry. No, not at all. No, it's been the same team all the way through the tournament. Obviously, she has her game plan. Obviously, going into each game, she must know sort of what to do beforehand. Obviously, it's worked so much, bringing on Brusset this time, bringing on Tooney this time, and it's keeps on working. So as we've said, I think in the last one we did, we always said don't fix what isn't broken, and it still wasn't really that broken to stop doing it. So we just carried on, and it's everyone expected it. I think that was the first time, I think somebody said it was the first time that's ever happened in a European tournament, that we kept the same team all the way through the tournament, which is quite unheard of in any game, in any sort of tournament, let alone in one Euros. So huge respect to her, because as if we keep finding out, it just kept working and working and working.
Now, Sam, this is a question a little bit away from the talking points that I sent to you guys, but just staying on the topic of the team, do we maybe run the risk of being found out with our starters and then our finishers? Will people just work out that we're going to run people ragged for 60 minutes and then bring on, as we say, our finishers and Russo, Toon and people like that? Are you worried at all that tactical side of things will come into play in the future, or do you have full faith?
That's a really, really good question. I think you've always got to have that side where you think you can be a bit sceptical and think, oh, they're not going to know our game plan, do this. And I think, going back to great, you know, if I use an Albion example, for instance, I think going back to Potter's first season after we had that big 3-0 victory against Watford, there were, you know, the Telegraph were posting photos of like tactical insights about all the triangles and Graham Potter's gameplay and how Albion would be found out. And I guess with the nature of the game these days, you know, in the last 10, 15 years and even beyond that, the tactical analysis has really grown. You know, there's specific performance analysis for passing, for tackles. So whatever focus there is, there's going to be hyper-focused on that. So I guess they know who players to target are. For example, in the semi-final, Kira Walsh was marked out of the game, but she still had a big impact. But I think the momentum's there. And then with her, you know, Serena Beekman's fantastic tactical insight and her experience at the Netherlands, and then with us now and then her previous roles, I think she's got enough knowledge and insight to be able to adapt the game accordingly to enable us to proceed. So I don't think that is a barrier.
No, amazing answer, to be fair to you. As I say, it was a little bit away from the talking point, so sorry to spring that on you. So let's talk a little bit about the atmosphere then, Cam. I'm going to bring it back a little bit further than at Wembley before the game. The week leading up, obviously, we played so well in the semi-finals, really convincing win. The belief just went up and up and up, as if it could go any higher. How are you feeling in the week leading up to the final? Obviously, knowing you had tickets, knowing you're going to be there. What were those overriding feelings?
To be honest, a lot of stress. I was kind of really excited, but I was also really, really nervous. Just, I think also what had happened with the men last year also played a part, because obviously it was a home final. Ended up losing, and I was just like, if we lose again, I don't know if I can handle this. I was very, very excited. I was just excited for the day to come, but I was just super, super nervous. Like, I think I've said about it on the pod before, I was extremely pessimistic. I wasn't going to jinx anything, and I was pretty much like that for the rest of the week up until the game itself. I was just like trying not to tempt fate or anything. It was, yeah, a lot of stress, to be honest, a lot of stress.
Fair enough. And to echo what Ian Wright said after the semi-final, this is the most belief and the most I've ever felt confident in an England side going on to win something, especially with the manager that we've got. She's just the one of the best football brains I've ever come across. I've watched so many interviews with her since, obviously, really getting into this side of football. And it's just been a breath of fresh air. So, Sam, let's talk about the atmosphere at Wembley Stadium. So you get there, I assume you walk up Wembley Way. Just talk to us about the building atmosphere to that first whistle.
Wow. Getting off the tube, walking up Wembley Way, there's a big buzz, there's sense of something exciting is going to happen. I mean, yes, England are playing in a major tournament, home finals, very exciting. But I think the belief that actually we can do something here was there. A very family atmosphere as well. I mean, I went to the Euros last year and then this year, and in comparison, wow. I think, you know, it's the next point is kind of a different talking point for another day, or perhaps later on, you know, women's, men's comparison football, probably a lot of flack for that. But the sense of anticipation, people are excited, there's a buzz, people just conversing with their families or just other football fans, just getting in the mood, talking to people. I mean, when I go to away games or home games, as I've said to all of you before, I'm 9 times out of 10 on my own. So I just strike up a conversation and you see lots of little children. For me, I've seen lots of little girls getting really excited about seeing their heroes playing football, which I found really quite in awe of, like, I was really excited for them. And there's a big sense of belief, a lot of nervous atmosphere as well. But I think some fans who'd had quite a bit to drink as well was sort of generating the atmosphere. But there was a buzz, a big buzz of excitement. And as you got close to the stadium, there are different pop-ups happening, bands, dancing, music generating, people singing Sweet Caroline and Three Lines on the Shirt. And I think that just helped build that buzz and continue that good atmosphere.
Yeah, what I found from this tournament, it's really helped me rekindle the love for football that I felt when I was a young boy. Like, as you say, being in awe of these players. When I went to that quarter final and I saw the likes of Beth Mead, Millie Bright play, and it took me back to being that 8-year-old looking at footballers and going, these people are just utterly incredible. And Dan, how has it made you feel? Obviously, I know you followed the women's game for a long time, but did you get that sense that people were falling in love with the game in a completely different way or just all over again?
I think people have got a newfound respect for women's football, because a lot of times it was just like, I would say I'd go into a women's game and not a lot of people would be there. And just like, because I remember when it first was at Lancing, really you'd get maybe a few hundred just stuff to turn up. So it'd be all the same sort of people you sort of see there most of the time. And then obviously when it's to Crawley, it's still about the same. You sort of get a handful of people. Only time I see a lot of people is when it's at the Amex, obviously for Brighton women's games. And it sort of shows that obviously that appetite is there. But obviously not a lot of people are interested. Now all of a sudden, with this home Euros, obviously we're seeing record crowds in each stadium, not just ours, in each stadium, as well as Wembley holding the biggest final in a men's and women's Euros, both of them, which is a surprise to me because I would have thought men would have had not basically about the same. But to hear that they've got the most is surprising to me. But it shows there is there. And now people will realise, actually, these women are amazing at football. I want to go and see that. I've seen that ripple happen. And obviously, I saw some stats that we released today, like, was it 200% more interest in women's football, which is incredible. Considering, like, as I say, I first went in, there'd be so little people there, and obviously people that aren't really that interested, to now people who might actually get a massive crowd, even at Crawley, by the looks of it as well, which is brilliant, not just for Brighton and Crawley or whatever, it'd be good for them to see a nice patched stadium to perform in front of and just obviously have that belief again. Obviously, has hope to see more kids come out and join their local teams. And because I know my hometown team is looking for under 14s, which I've retweeted on Twitter. I'm really hoping that this now is going to build up for the next generation of Lionesses, even not men's team as well, to sort of go, right, I can do this too, especially for the girls. And hopefully see a lot more of them in the Lionesses squad, maybe in the next 10, 20 years, and do this all over again and have this all happen again.
Exactly. Unbelievably well said, Dan. You like smacked the nail on the head on so many points there. So many points that we are going to talk about in a little bit more detail in just a minute. But let's talk first whistle then, Cam. Kickoff. First 20 minutes, it looked like we probably had the edge. I know there's a few Ellen White chances. I think Lucy Bronze was denied with another header, so she could have got another goal this tournament. Did you feel like we had the edge those first 20 minutes?
Yeah, I think it was fairly even, but I think we probably just edged it. As you said, Ellen White had a couple of really good chances. I kind of thought from the kickoff it was clear that Germany were missing pop up front. They were kind of putting it forward, but no one was, they didn't really have the options like to start with. I think as they got more into the game, they settled and they managed to find a way of not having, you know, their big centre forward there. But it was definitely evident from the start that they were probably missing her a little bit. And I think we were probably trying to capitalise on that. And it's a shame that, yeah, I would have loved Ellen White to have gotten a goal. You know, you can see how much it meant to her, like when we won in the semi-final and then at the end of the game, which I'm sure we'll go into. But yeah, it definitely felt at the start of the first half that we were having the edge over Germany for sure. And yeah, luckily it didn't come back to bite us, so we didn't capitalise on those chances.
No, exactly. Obviously, a team as successful as Germany were always going to grow into the game. Serial winners, as you already mentioned, Cam. So obviously, at the end of the first half, we'd probably say that Germany ended that first half the better side, Sam. I remember most notably a Leah Williamson clearance on the line from a corner. How were the nerves going into half time then? Obviously, as I say, Germany grew back into the game. Yeah, what were you thinking?
I think with that goal line scramble and Leah Williamson clearing it off the line just before half time as well, you could sense Germany had the upper edge at that point. And at that point, I was thinking, let's just get us to half time, regroup, collect. You know, Beekman's very good at making sure the players are grounded. And I think that's what's been very evident throughout qualification, throughout the tournament, and what in just the 10 months that she's been in charge. It's hard to fathom that she's only been in charge 10 months, but just to recollect. But I think if that goal had gone in just before half time, with the men's, you know, probably get a lot of flack for this, I think heads would have gone down, you know, everyone would be moaning, going, oh, we're going to lose again. But what we've seen with the women is their bounce back ability and that resilience. Oh, I hate that word. Actually, I think Leah Williamson and Chloe Kelly alluded to it on Breakfast TV this morning, is that their heads don't go down, they just keep the head up, keep going, keep fighting. So I think although it was a bit nervy, it's still, we can do this, actually. We're going in level pegging at half-time. We know Beekman's game plan, 15, 20 minutes. Chloe Kelly, Russo, we're going to come on to Tooney, run at the players. I guess tactics may have changed slightly when Mido got that injury in the second half. But it was a bit nervous. McGall looked very, you know, so I'm going to probably talk about something I'm going to talk about in a bit. But I think, as Cam alluded to, they were missing pop up front and that aerial presence. So it kind of reminds me of when we were clearly missing Murray to hold the ball up at times. I kind of went off on a tangent then, diverted, so I apologise.
No, absolutely not. As you probably know, on this podcast, Tom goes off on tangents all the time. Tom's going to be listening to this, so he's going to absolutely love that tangent. So, yeah, no, fair play to you, Sam. Keeping the spirit of this podcast up. Dan, as Sam mentioned, obviously, what these girls have shown throughout this tournament is their heads don't go down. Obviously, we saw the quarterfinal at the Amex. You were there. Cam, was you at the quarterfinal? Can't remember. But obviously Spain taking the lead, as you say, Sam, the heads in the men's game, and how toxic that the atmosphere can get if you do go behind, it can just completely kill you off. But the support and the atmosphere in amongst the squad, in amongst the supporters, Dan, did you have full faith that all of these Germany chances weren't going to hinder us, and we were going to come out in that second half and just fight for that opening goal?
Yeah, you know, we can see that their heads don't really drop. We say with the quarterfinals, this is a massive example whereas Spain really could have won that game on any given day. They could have just won that game, and we would not have had any chance. But, you know, unfortunately we did, and obviously then we got to the final we can now talk about and relish in. The Germany chances, but they live to regret, because really they, a lot of times they were caught sort of getting into the game, sort of finding chances and starting to get more on target, and it did start to get a bit worrying, because obviously we'd obviously, you should say, we had flashbacks to basically last summer and to say, oh, you know, it's going to happen to us again. We're going to have it snatched away from us face to something we have no control over. And obviously, as well, I was thinking to myself, we had had a penalty shoot at this tournament. And then thank God it didn't get to that point either, which we get to as well.
Yeah, exactly that. And we mentioned the quarterfinal, and we looked like it might be curtains for us. Spain would perform so well, incredibly set up side, I have to say. But that girl, Ella Toom, Cam, let's just paint the picture here. In the final, Kira Walsh with a ball out of space, just the one of the best through balls I've ever seen. And who's on the end of it, Cam? Talk us through that goal.
Toon. Oh, it's just class, honestly. Like that, Kira Walsh has been excellent this tournament, by the way. She's been absolutely outstanding. And it's because she's just sat in that holding role so well and like just nullified all the threat. And then she comes out with something like that, just threads the needle perfectly to Ella Toon. And I tell you what, for a youngster to have that much composure to take the ball on in front of 87,000 people in a major tournament final, to have the composure to then ship the keeper, is just unbelievable. It was such a good goal, and she really deserved it. Like her buddy, Rusio, were amazing whenever they came on the pitch. You know, they were the super subs throughout the tournament, and she thoroughly deserved that goal. And honestly, everything about that goal was just filth, absolute filth.
Yeah, we've had a few decent goals this tournament, and maybe again at the end I might ask each of you if you can pick out one goal for me as your England goal of the tournament. So get thinking, because I will be asking the question. Sam, you predicted the goal. You got a nice temporary tattoo. Talk us through that. We love a chip, so go on.
So, walking down Wembley Way, they had different pop-ups, and they had a Just Eat sponsored thing. And I was looking somewhere to get my face painted. I was wanting to get some flags, but couldn't find any. I didn't want to buy any face paint. They had these temporary tattoos. And I thought, why not? You know, I've got permanent ones. A little temporary tattoo of 2 to 3 days would be nice. And they're all different football-themed ones. And one of them was like, Chip the Keeper. And it had the words, and it had some little fries and a football on it with like a little rocket underneath it. And I thought, gonna go for that one. In all of, you know, Frank Kirby's lob in one of the previous games. And I thought, I can feel something, you know, if we win with a chip goal, I predicted that all day long. And then when it happened, I was like, I should have put a bet on that one.
No, exactly. And what a way to open the scoring. But it was obviously always evident that Germany were going to try and push their way back into the game. I was a little bit frustrated. I don't know if you guys have watched the game back, but the commentators just seemed to be getting on the girls' back a little bit, saying, oh, we're losing our concentration. But for me, it's always going to be the case that if we go ahead, of course, Germany are going to throw everything at it. And Dan, eventually they did get their goal through McGall, I believe it was. It to be fair to her, it was an exquisite finish and came a little bit out of nowhere. I didn't expect her to finish it like that. So was it coming? Did you expect that? And did you expect us to fight back after?
So you really sort of expect it when they're a team like, obviously, Germany have done so well in major tournaments and in finals. So I think they said they were unbeaten in finals. So they would have to obviously know to have to fight back sometimes. And it had been coming, I think, because a lot of times they were starting to get more dangerous as they come forward. And saying that, this literally sort of came in, smashed right in the goal. It was like, oh, okay. We've got a game on our hands now. And obviously then my brain went, penalties. I'm like, no, please, a quick eye on penalties.
And Cam, what was the atmosphere like in the stadium then when Germany scored? There was obviously a pocket of Germany fans over in one of the corners. The flags were flying all game, even after the game, I believe the flags were still flying. So fair play to them on that. How were the nerves when that goal went in? Did you think that it was going to slip away from us?
Yeah, personally, I got very despondent just because we were like 10 minutes away from winning and Germany scored. I was just like, yeah, here we go again. That's it. I was the same as Dan. I was just like, oh yeah, this is going to penalties now. For some reason, I just didn't fathom that we could get another goal. I don't know why. I just got so despondent. I don't think the atmosphere was too affected. Obviously, it went a little flat when Germany scored because, as you say, it was a largely English crowd. There was a pocket of German fans in the corner. I couldn't really hear them from where I was, to be fair. I was right up in the heavens and they were down at the bottom. But then, to be fair, the crowd, I think they kept the girls going. They really got behind the team again, and particularly going into extra time. I think it helped the team get that final push. But as you guys say, the girls have shown this tournament that they don't give up. And whilst my head suddenly went down, theirs didn't. And, you know, fair play to them.
Yeah, and that's the one thing that I've absolutely adored from this tournament is the support for the team. Every time we went forward, I keep referring to the quarterfinal because that's the only experience I had actually being in the stadium. But every time we flooded forward, the noise levels were just spine tingling. Even now, I'm getting goosebumps on the back of my neck. It's like, why can't that happen like across all of football? Like it does in some countries. Obviously, we see like River Plate and people like that. They're just, the noise levels are insane. Cam, you've probably been to a few in Europe and elsewhere that have just been unreal. But this is the closest that I've ever had to the atmosphere being on top from the first minute all the way till 10 minutes after the game. So Sam, how was that in the stadium, and the noise levels ramping up every set piece with the clappers? They were just urging the team to get back into the game.
Absolutely, yeah. I think after that equaliser went in, I think there was a level of despondency around the ground and a few little collective groans here and there as you get at club football, in a certain stadium that we all know and love. But I guess, you know, they say the roar of the lion, but I don't know if Cam will agree. Obviously, you guys, from your experiences at the group games and the quarterfinal games, there was a literal roar from the crowd getting behind the girls. As soon as that ball was back at the centre spot for kickoff, there was a big roar to get behind the girls. And I know Chloe Kelly was really trying to gather some oomph as well every time she was on the corner, just try and generate that noise and really get the team going and get the crowd going as well. And there was still that sense that, yes, this is possible. Let's get behind them. You know, we're outnumbering the Germans. Their support was phenomenal, you know, throughout. So fair play to them.
Perfectly said. And Dan, you mentioned already for the second time in the space of a year, we went to extra time. You were getting an urge of deja vu. Were you thinking penalties? If you were thinking penalties, did you think that we could beat the Germans on penalties, who just never seem to lose?
It just sort of felt like it was going to be a repeat to me. I was just thinking, we're going to get to penalties, and I don't think I could take that again. Just having to sit there and go, got to penalties again, and then just lose out, unfortunately, I'd just be like, nah, this is not me done. Let's be done. Because I did that during the last year. I was basically when one of the penalty takers come up, I was like, he's an all penalty taker for his club. That's it. It's done. I walked out and luckily that we were safe. But we're not talking about that one. We're talking about the one we actually won. But yeah, when it come to extra time, I was thinking the legs are going to get tired. We're going to go to penalties. And fingers crossed, because it's just a lucky lottery. You can win it, you can lose it. Someone's got to win, someone's got to lose. And I was really hoping it wasn't going to be us that was going to lose.
To be honest, I actually thought we had the edge fitness-wise going into extra time. The Germans just seemed to be just dead on their feet. And obviously, we've spoken about our finishers, Russo, Toon, still full of energy, full of legs. And, you don't want to be a defender that's played 95 minutes of football with Alicia Russo running at you, that's for sure. But let's talk, obviously, the moment that we've all been waiting to talk about, Cam. The goal, the corner kick, two bites at the cherry for it to go in the back of the net. Eventually, it trickles over the line. Chloe Kelly, who's had, I believe, before the tournament, a torrid time with injury. What a story. Just talk us through, like, what were the noise levels like? I wasn't even there and I'm getting goosebumps.
It was honestly unbelievable. It was just so loud. It was a bit like the when Georgia Stanway scored at Brighton in the quarterfinal, that the noise then just took the roof off the Amex then, and it was so similar for this goal. And oh my god, yeah, it was almost like watching it in slow motion as well, because you just saw her like kind of swipe at the first chance, and then she manages to get a hit on it on the second one, and it like almost slow motion going in, and then just everyone went absolutely crazy. And yeah, what a moment. And what a moment, as you say, what a moment for her. She did her ACL last year, and I think she only came back, like, must have been earlier this year for Man City. So yeah, what a story for that young girl to come on and score for the most important goal of her career. Like, surely, like, I don't think she's going to be able to top that unless we win the World Cup next year. But anyway, but oh yeah, honestly, I get just thinking about it. Just it's just amazing. Honestly, absolutely incredible.
Yeah, and I don't know if you guys probably noticed when you were in the stadium celebrating like crazy. But obviously, Chloe Kelly stopped because she thought it might have been ruled out, or there might have been a VAR check. Was there any moment in that stadium, Sam, that the crowd thought that that might not have been the moment, or was it just so rapid that you just saw Chloe Kelly run off, rip her shirt off, and history was made?
Well, as well as screaming my head off, crying at this point, thinking, oh my gosh, here we go. Instinctively, first thing I did was look at the lineswoman. Where's her flag? Okay, it's down. Okay. See Chloe Kelly off celebrating, shirt off, whole team running, thinking, okay, breathe, you know, just enjoy this. And then looking at the referee, making sure she's not making any signals, just thinking, okay. And as soon as the ball was, you know, back on the centre spot and kicked off, it happened quite quick. I was like, right, can't retract it now. Here we go. It felt like an age, although it was realistic for about a minute and a half. But electric tears at this point, thinking, okay, here we go. Now let's hold on, keep going. But yeah.
Say you're thinking, right, let's hold on to this now. And damn, what happened after is probably the masterclass in keeping the ball in the corner. I think that ball I think that ball's still in the corner somewhere. I think Toon and Russo are still holding that ball up. How was that, just to see us frustrate Germany so much? And as we say, they were dead on their feet already. They now had to chase the game. I think the manager made a few questionable substitutions, took off their, probably arguably their best player in their centre-back, their number five, I can't remember her name, I think before our goal. But then they just had no legs to get back into the game. And as I say, as Sam said, just holding on to that game. Were you thinking that ball was never going to come out that corner?
I think you saw at one point that Chloe, I think, decided to go up towards the goal. I was like, hang on a minute, and went back. So I think she wanted to try for a goal and went, actually, it's probably better to do it this way. And we then took it back. But yeah, that's the tactic 101. If you want to win the game, you keep it in the corner flag and you don't lose it. And it frustrated them so much. And to obviously have that killer blow of a goal down in such, when it's already tired, their heads must have gone. They must have been like, that's it, that's what's done. We're just trying to chase the game. And obviously with them trying to keep it in the corner flag, frustrated them even more. And you can sort of see that they had no fight. They couldn't really do much about it. It was dead cert, 2-1, England. That was it. Done. That was it.
Yeah, exactly that. And that the waiting for that final whistle cam inside the stadium when we're just keeping that ball in the corner. And finally, after what felt like an hour of doing that, the final whistle comes and England have won their first major trophy in 56 years. It's the girls who bring it home. We joked about it before we started recording the last podcast, Cam. We're trying to get you to sing It's Coming Home. It is home now. And the people that were banned the last time we won a major tournament, they're the ones that do it. Just sum up your feelings and like how proud of the women's game you are.
God, I'll try to get through this without crying. it's just unbelievable. I burst into tears as soon as the final whistle went. I just couldn't help it. And I know so many other people that did. I've seen, you know, even men, like I've seen them in just floods of tears. I just can't describe it. I honestly can't. I can't describe that feeling. But as you say, like, I think it means so much more because it is the women's side that have done it. Don't get me wrong. No disrespect to the men's side at all. But, you know, women's football in this country, you know, it suffered for years because of getting banned for 50 years. And certainly in my generation, and it'd be the same for Sam, I'm sure she'll go into that. We were told, like, as kids, you know, but girls don't play football. You can't play football. It's not for you. There wasn't that opportunity and anything there. And I think that's the same as well for, I'm just going to say about Ellen White. I saw this newspaper article, I don't know if you guys have seen that, of when she was like 9 and she was told that she was banned from playing in like a boys' league. And now she's now a European champion. It's crazy. And that's like, I think that's why it means so much, because it's for some of those players as well. They had to go through all that. It's not just, you know, the fans and stuff. It's them as well. And it's saying, and yeah, it's just unbelievable, honestly. It's incredible. And it means, honestly, so, so much. And yeah, I'm getting teary again now, so I'm going to shut up.
No, fair play to you, Cam. My wife is one of the many that were told that she couldn't play football as well. She grew up in America, surprisingly, actually, based on their national team's record, that she was told she can't play football. There was no clubs around for her to join. No, you're going to play with your brother. You're going to play on the street. You don't get any academy that the men get and the boys get. It's just so inspiring to see what they've achieved. And as Alex Scott always mentions at the end, hashtag who cares. 87,000, Sam. 87,000, just over, at that stadium, which is, as Dan mentioned, a record for any European competition. Just sum up how that makes you feel and what that means to you as one of the people that were told you're not allowed to like football.
87,000 at the ground, 17.4 million people on TV, plus a further 5 million online. Wow, is what I can say, you know, from being told no by teachers or by the media, the press, you know, everything. And even, you know, you have to see it to believe it, don't you? You have to be able to see it to be able to do it. You know, growing up, you think, oh, I want to be a footballer. And, you know, it's why little boys, you know, I'm using that as an example now. They could see their, you know, their Beckhams, their Ronaldos, Messis, Zidanes, etc. Even before that. But, you know, for me growing up, yes, I idolised a lot of the men, you know, from Brighton and other teams as well. But I really aspired to be like Faye White, Rachel Bianchi, Casey Stoney, Kelly Smith. Kelly Smith, bloody phenomenal player, absolutely outstanding. And her generation and many before her were the ones that are that big driving force in pushing us to where we are today. So to see that success and just hope that that momentum continues, it doesn't plateau, it'd just be spectacular. I think, obviously, I had to watch the coverage back Monday after I got back on Sunday night. And I think Gary Logan's at the end, you know, and ode to 1966. They think it's all over. No, it's wrong. It's just the beginning. And I think this is just a platform to continue it, you know. Hashtag who cares? Everyone cares.
Exactly that. Exactly that. And as a father now with a one-year-old, and she's going to grow up and she's going to know how incredible these women were to win our first one since 66, obviously. And she's going to be of the age when, you know, Chloe Kelly's coming through into her prime, Ella Toon's coming into her prime. She's going to be, they're going to be the players that she's going to look at and say, I want to be Ella Toon. I want to be Alessia Russo. And I'm going to tell her, you can be. There is nothing in your way to stop you from becoming a lioness. And those are the dreams that have to be realised now. And as you say, this momentum has to carry on. It absolutely has to. And if there's anything that people can get involved in, whether it be volunteering, whether it be taking your daughter to her first ever football club trial, or even taking her down the park to kick the ball around with you, those moments are so important. I remember those moments as a young boy with my dad, with my granddad, and those were the moments that made me fall in love with football, made me want to play football. Obviously, I never pursued it, but there were so many options for me to do that, and I feel so awful that I never did, because those were taken away from you guys, and that has to change now, and that will change. And as a father that has a daughter, I will assure you two that if she wants to play football, she will play football. So yeah, that's what I have to say on that, before we bring the mood back up a little bit. yeah, it's, as I say, utterly inspiring. And four of those incredible women got into the team of the tournament. But there was a little bit of controversy, Cam, or Dan, I'm going to come to you for this one, Dan. Bit of controversy, five German players in the side, only the four English. No Millie Bright. So the players that got in were Beth Mead, Mary Earps, Kira Walsh, and Leah Williamson. All absolutely deserved of it. No Millie Bright, Dan. What do you make of that?
Why? She's been amazing this whole tournament. In that quarterfinal, which you were alluding to, amazing. The games that I've done, the Norway game, amazing. Swedish game, amazing. Why is she not there? And I saw there was a French player there. I haven't watched all of the games, so I don't know if she warranted a place there. But they were knocked out in the quarters. And we got to the final. Why? And obviously, I know as well, obviously Germany had a lot more players than us as well. I thought it was a bit strange because, as I say as well, normally the winning team normally has the most. You see, like with the club teams, you see like Liverpool's like Premier League the team of the year. Normally Liverpool and Man City probably fill up those spaces, and then obviously the other players dotted around. But yeah, I don't understand. I don't understand what Millie's got to do to get into that, to be considered for that, because she did literally everything. You know, she was part of a team that won the Euros and was probably one of the standouts in the whole tournament. I'd be gutted if I was her, to be fair.
Yeah, exactly. And something that my wife pointed out when we were at the quarterfinals is every player on that pitch, obviously they look at Leah Williamson because she's a captain, but behind her, that everyone's relying on Millie Bright to be composed. And it's Millie Bright that tells people to calm down, and Millie Bright that's ordering the back line the whole time. And she's, my wife said to me, oh, she's carried that team. She's so hench that because she's been carrying this team. Are we a bit biased, Cam? I think our whole back line could have been in that team of the season. We conceded two goals the whole tournament. We won 8-0 in one of our games. We've scored 6,000 goals, I think. So are we being biased, or do they really deserve that place?
No, I did think Millie Bright should be there. In recent years, I think she's been a bit inconsistent, but this tournament, throughout the whole thing, she was outstanding. she's really just taken the game to that next level. I think all of the backline did a good job, to be fair. I think Lucy Bronze, as class as she is, I think she was a little bit hit and miss at times, so I'm not surprised that she didn't make it. But yeah, full credit to Liam Williamson. You know, her first tournament as captain, she was outstanding, honestly. And she speaks so well. You listen to her interviews since, and like, while she might have been a little bit hungover, like, she still speaks so well. She's such a role model to everyone. And yeah, I do think it's a little bit unfortunate that Millie Bright isn't there with her. I think certainly at least she should have been named in the team of the year. But yeah, congrats to all the ladies that were.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it goes without saying, we have to mention that the woman behind the team and the team behind the team, what an incredible job they've done. And Sam, I don't think there was an official announcement of the manager or coach of the tournament, but surely it had to be Serena Weigman.
Sorry, difficulty there. No, absolutely. I think you got it spot on there, mate. You know, if anyone else had won, their manager would be manager of the tournament. But it might be, you know, about even being biased, you know, tactically, she's astute, got the job done, and very measured throughout. Didn't get us overexcited. You know, 1-1-0, she did, but 1-1-0, it's 3 points, on to the next one. A bit Graham Potter-esque almost, I guess. But very measured and passionate about her football as well. But for me, definitely coach of the tournament, you know. I'd love to see, you know, where she goes next. Hopefully after a caravan holiday, where they're talking about they'll extend her contract beyond 2025 and go from there. But if I can quickly just say something about Millie Bright as well, if that's all right. Criminally underrated, I think, as Cam alluded to, she's been a bit inconsistent in the last couple of years through like She Believes Cup and it, the Worlds. I think what we've got to remember is she's been part of that ever-present back line, which has been over the last 7 or 8 years made up of Demi Stokes often, Alex Greenwood, Lucy Bronze at right back, and then Steph Horton at centre back. And Steph Horton missed a large portion of the season, slowly made it back, and then it was controversial that she was left out, but in my honest opinion, I think she's going to struggle to get back in the team now based on how Leah Williamson and Millie Bright have formed that partnership. Williamson plays that position and then a little bit further forward for Arsenal. But I think she's made a bloody good staking claim to be there and obviously just placed Steph as captain as well. But Millie Bright, criminally underrated, and as you both alluded to, was that leader as well on the pitch. You know, if Leah wasn't there, she was getting behind the girls, arm around them, right, come on, let's get up and go. And what I did notice was her and a few others actually went over to console the German players after as well, which I thought shows true leadership.
Yeah, exactly. There's so many people that you could shout for captain in that side. And that's just such a good thing to have. As you say, there's leaders all over the pitch. And you're leading from the left, the right, up front, through the back from Mary Earps. So, yeah, it's been so refreshing and so incredible to watch this team. So, Dan, obviously looking ahead then, the WSL's coming back. As we've already mentioned, 247% more season tickets have been sold by the Albion women, which is phenomenal numbers. Will you yourself be going to more WSL games as a result of this tournament?
I'd like to go to some more. Even though before I've very been outspoken about what badly the decision have Crawley, really, because of the location. I know from like they do that Seagull Travel will do a bus from Littlehampton right up to, I think it's up to the Amex, I think, to take everybody to Crawley. I like the idea of them having more games at the Amex because obviously they have announced they had the first two home games at the Amex. I just like to see, I think as we discussed in the last podcast, that maybe there's got to be a better option to have to where the women's play. Say I loved going to Lancing because it was just so easy to get to. Obviously the ground's not great, but you know, we went just to watch the football. But And then obviously they took it to Crawley. It was obviously Crawley's a much better state of affairs though. Like we weren't really, I say, weren't used it properly because we only sort of have one end. Sort of like we don't have, I think it's the camera end, obviously to sit in. I don't think anybody used to go sit the other side. I didn't see anybody. So hopefully this, after this tournament, as I say, I think I've put the other night that I hope I see more people there better than before to sort of support the women's team. If you want to support the Brighton team or support another women's team, then go for it. Do as you please. No, just go and support and just, you know, cheer them on and show them that they are loved. Because they say there's so many years before that, as I say, I've probably been going to, when it was at Lancing, a few years, when we had like Faye and I can't remember what the people's names, I can't remember more. There was then we got put into the Super League. Then we moved to Crawley, and the crowds weren't massive. It was sort of like it was a special group of people who basically went to games. I'm just trying to repeat myself now, but yeah. I'd love to go to some more and hope to see there's bigger crowds. And it's just, it'd be great. It'd just be awesome to see more people say, at least even if the ground was full, that'd be even amazing to see Crawley just full of fans going to support the Albion.
Yeah, definitely. And Cam, what do you think has to happen for the Amex to become a permanent feature in those higher up at the club to be opening the Amex for every WSL game? We've seen through this tournament, albeit the national team, that we can sell out the Amex for a women's game. What do you think has to happen? Does there have to be more at Crawley? Do we have to just build in it slowly? Or do we just take the punt?
It's a good question. Personally, I think straight away probably playing all the games at the Amex is probably not the right call. I think you probably do need to kind of build up a little bit at Crawley to start with. Even though I know a lot of people, they've been saying I would get a season ticket, but it's in Crawley. For me, it's fine because I'm not that far from Crawley, but I understand from Brighton it is, and you know, elsewhere along the south coast it is a bit of a pain to get to. But I think personally the club probably won't do it until they see those attendances at Crawley go up, just from a logical view here. As much as I'd love all the games to be at the Amex this season, I can't see it happening, unfortunately. But hopefully I could be proved wrong. I'd love to be proved wrong, and you know, hope it's been amazing news about season tickets, how much they've gone up just within the last couple of days. It's crazy, and it's so fantastic to see, and hopefully that keeps going. I know tickets for the Amex games are on sale now, so I sincerely hope that we get a lot of people in for that one, for definite. Well, for two of them actually. And yeah, hopefully it goes from there. Just needs a support. I think before we get towards the Amex, but we're getting there. I think, I don't think it'll be far away.
Yeah, it's extremely promising. And we've spoken so much about the legacy of this tournament and what it's left in so many people's hearts, and how much the women's game is going to get pushed now and become more successful. Sam, just before we sign off, what are your hopes for the legacy of this game to just carry on growing and growing? Do you hope to see the Albion women back in Brighton in the next 5 years, 10 years? How long do you think it's going to take?
So legacy-wise, just want the momentum to continue, and in not just to be a major tournament sort of thing. I think even after the men's Euros last summer, everyone was fighting to get tickets to the semi-finals and the finals. When you get to the Tuesday night qualifiers, yes, I know people work, but the buzz isn't there. It's like those, people want the glamour games, not the wet Tuesday night in Stoke, for example. Sorry, Stoke fans, but you know the age-old analogy. So I think that momentum and keeping that fighting to it alive. I'd love for us to be back at the Amex, to be back in the Amex or, in Brighton full time. I know I said this to you, Joe, the other day about emailing the club about what their plans are for this. And legally, they're not allowed to have the WSL games at Lancing. That's why they had to change. But they are looking to find a more permanent home. They didn't really allude to much more else because obviously the top five, top secret plans, I guess. But within the next 5 years, absolutely, I'd love us to have a more central location to make it more accessible, at least, and just keep the momentum going. Obviously, got some good signings coming in. Obviously, we've had some outgoings as well. But, you know, just keep driving forward.
Yeah, exactly that. So as we sign off then, guys, I said I was going to ask you for your England goal of the tournament. So, Cam, I hope you've been thinking. Because I'm going to come to you first. England goal of the tournament. Who does it go to and in which game?
Okay, so there's two goals that really stick out for me. One of them is Georgia Stanway's rocket at the Amex. That was just... I was behind that goal as well, so just to see that, just Aaron, amazing. But I'm going to have to go for Russo in the semi-final. Just, I still can't get over the audacity to even just try that. It's just unbelievable, honestly, unbelievable. So yeah, I'm going to give it to Alicia Russo.
Matt, fair play. We're probably going to make this a clean sweep if I can delve into your guys' minds. Dan, is it Russo or is it somebody else?
See, I like the Russo goal, but for me, I have to go for Stanway at the Amex, because you just sort of, it's different to see like a goal like, obviously, Russo's goal on TV. It's obviously that you go, that's mind-blowing. But when you're actually there to see it and to see that Stanway goal this year, because I say we sort of all, you know, it was 1-1, we sort of lost hope. We thought it was going to go all the way to, let's say again, penalties again. We're thinking it's gonna go south. Then she just pops out of the corner straight in, and it's like just to fill the atmosphere, the stitches just explode with just everyone just feeling like, yes, we've done it. We're gonna win this game now, and it's just amazing. So I'm gonna go with Miss Stanway at the Yamet.
Well, fair enough. That threw me and Cam off. Sam, are you thinking Russo or are you thinking somebody else? Oh, you're muted, Sam.
There we go. Try that again. Managed all the way through until then. I had two or three in mind. I think they've all been alluded to. Russo's for that audacity to just do that. Obviously being a former Brighton player as well. Stanway's thunderbastard of a goal. Or, excuse me, I can't swear. But we all know what that goal was. We're there, living, breathing it, and the roof of the Amex went off. The other one that crossed my mind was Beth Mead's second goal in our 8-0 victory, because it was a lovely team goal, lovely build-up play when it came over from the right of the pitch and she cut inside three defenders and took it into the bottom corner. I thought that was a brilliant goal. If I had to pinpoint my goal of the tournament for England, it would be Georgia Stanway's goal, because it was that decisive extra time. Take us through.
Wow. All right. So now I've got the deciding vote, Cam. Is it going to be Russo?
Russo.
See, I'm just going to throw it completely different and say Chloe Kelly, just because of what it meant. I mean, you can't begrudge me of that one. Technically not the best goal. Obviously, two bites at the cherry, as I said earlier. But for what it meant, it just brought us home our first trophy since 66. And the scenes, the absolute scenes, I love it. But obviously, the goals we've mentioned are all worthy winners. I guess until the next, obviously, women's game, as we say, we hope this momentum carries on. The World Cup next year, there's so much to look forward to. And as we sign off, I want to repeat myself. 56 years ago, we won our last trophy. 56 years ago, women were banned from playing football. Cam, I'm not trying to make you cry, I promise. These girls are incredible. I have to go on record and say that, even though I've said it a million times. Girls going into the future, they will not be banned. They will not be begrudged of playing the game. They will know that they can be champions, because we are champions of Europe. We are Albion obsessed, and we are unbelievably England Lionesses obsessed. So yeah, thank you for joining us today. It's home. Football is home. See you later, guys, and thanks for joining us. Bye-bye.